Greetings, and welcome to Mobivity Holding Corp. First Quarter 2018 Financial Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Charles Matthews.
Thank you, and welcome to Mobivity's First Quarter 2018 Financial Results Conference Call. We appreciate your interest in our company and joining us on the call. On the call today is Mobivity's founder, chairman, and CEO, Dennis Becker, and myself, Charles Matthews, CFO. Before we get started, I'd like to call everyone's attention to our safe harbor policy. Please note that certain statements made on this call will be forward-looking statements, which are subject to considerable risks and uncertainties. We caution you that such statements reflect our best judgments based on factors currently known to us and that the actual events or results could differ materially. Please refer to the documents we file from time to time with the SEC, in particular, our most recently filed quarterly report on Form 10-Q and our annual report on Form 10-K. These documents contain and identify important risk factors and other information that may cause our actual results to differ from those contained in our forward-looking statements. Any forward-looking statements made during this call are being made as of today. If this call is replayed or reviewed after today, the information presented during this call may not contain current or accurate information. Except as required by law, we assume no obligation to update these forward-looking statements publicly or to update the reasons actual results could differ materially from those anticipated in the forward-looking statements, even if the information becomes available in the future. Today's call may include non-GAAP financial measures, which require a reconciliation to the most directly comparable financial measures, which are calculated and presented in accordance with GAAP and can be found in this week's press release, which is also available at mobivity.com. I'd also like to remind everyone that we adopted the new revenue recognition accounting standard, otherwise referred to as ASC 606, during the first quarter of 2018 on a modified retrospective basis. This means the results for reporting periods beginning on or after January 1, 2018, are presented under the new revenue recognition standards, while prior period amounts before January 1, 2018, are not adjusted. With that, I'd like to turn the call over to Dennis Becker, our CEO. Dennis?
Thanks, Charles, and thanks everyone for joining us on our call today. I'm pleased to report that during the first quarter of this year, we drove strong growth in our sales pipeline that is now bearing fruit in accelerating top-line revenue performance. Our mission all along has been to empower brick-and-mortar brands with the ability to leverage data in driving consumer behavior to improve business performance, and the market is starting to take notice like ever before. Current events, including Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's testimony to Congress, highlight just how powerful data is in shaping consumer behavior. The fact that the outcome of a presidential election may have been swayed by leveraging consumer data to target information speaks volumes as to the immense power data can have on influencing the behavior of people. High-profile events, such as Facebook's implication in the 2016 presidential election, are creating an awakening to the power of data across all industries, and we're now well-positioned to lead in the transformation of brick-and-mortar commerce to a data-driven world. On the heels of the massive scale of onboarding Subway's thousands of locations to our platform in early 2016, we proceeded to invest in bolstering our technology and product offering throughout 2017. These investments in advancing and expanding our product offering are creating strong tailwinds, propelling our progress and ability to absorb accelerating demand in the marketplace. A key win in Q1 includes a private equity-owned brand that, thanks to the overwhelming results we delivered, expanded their contract from a small trial to a three-year term with a seven-figure contract value, including an agreement to prepay their full 3-year contract license fees within the first 13 months of the 36-month contract. This brand's parent owns and operates more than 1,000 additional locations across other brands, and we're confident we'll expand this relationship to their entire system, which would triple the contract value. We're also told that they intend on acquiring several other brands over the coming years, and our goal is to ensure their entire system leverages our full solution portfolio as it grows. Should they hit their growth goals, this one account alone could double our current annual revenue run rate. More importantly, this win stemmed from a growing relationship with a major beverage brand. Consumer packaged good brands, or CPGs, generate a material portion of their distribution through restaurant chains. For example, a brand like Chick-fil-A may only serve Coke products, while Pizza Hut only serves Pepsi products. Other brands might serve snack products, such as Subway markets Frito-Lay chips like Doritos. It turns out that these CPG brands set aside hundreds of millions of dollars in co-marketing funds when brokering deals with restaurant chains. These marketing funds are used to help promote their products throughout the restaurant's locations, as well as other forms of marketing, such as television or digital advertising. One major CPG brand approached us last year and began evaluating how our product could enhance the value of their joint marketing efforts with their restaurant customers, as well as create a competitive advantage in winning and defending restaurant partnerships against competitors. We learned that our product is uniquely positioned to drive value, not just for the restaurant operator, but for the CPG as well, given the invaluable data and fully attributable marketing programs powered by our technology. For example, we could operate targeted mobile engagement campaigns that provide consumers with discounts and offers that include the CPG's products, such as get $2 off a sandwich with the purchase of a 20-ounce beverage. These campaigns drive product sales for the CPG, increase traffic for the restaurant, and extensive data for everyone so that the campaign can be fully evaluated for performance. Everyone wins. This potent combination of value for both the CPG and the restaurant operator has attracted a major beverage brand that works with more than 700 restaurant partners and represents more than $100 million of addressable market for our services. In just the last 60 days, we have already won new customer contracts with this partner, including one deal where the beverage partner is even subsidizing the licensing costs of our solution on behalf of the restaurant brand. Collaborating with CPGs is quickly suggesting that our sales cycles can be dramatically decreased while very efficiently expanding our reach directly to the vast majority of the restaurant space. Key to this recent win was the launch of our Recurrency platform earlier this year. Recurrency is the culmination of scaling our technology across thousands of locations, millions of consumers, and billions of transactions over the course of the past few years since commercially launching with Subway in 2016. In fact, the investments we've made in expanding our product value, coupled with proven results, has supported increases in our licensing fees. We're quoting as high as $200 per month per location, where brands may be looking to license our full Recurrency solution. To be clear, length of term, volume of locations, and other factors ultimately shape final pricing. However, we've been very excited to see recently closed sales at prices of $100 per month per location, including annual licensing fees being paid up front. According to the National Restaurant Association, there are over 1 million restaurant locations in the United States alone. So just 10% of this addressable market equates to $120 million in upside, assuming $100 per month per location licensing fees. I'm also very excited to report on progress we're making towards a very hot trend in the marketplace, digital ordering. The use of mobile apps, text messages, and the internet to order food from a restaurant or other food service outlets grew by 18% last year and now accounts for 1.9 billion food service visits, reported by the NPD Group, a leading global information company. Carissa Ganelli, Chief Digital Officer of Subway, stated that Subway's goal is to make ordering and receiving your favorite Subway meal as easy as possible. Having been recently featured with the GSMA and Google at this year's Mobile World Congress event in Barcelona, we featured a demo we developed with Subway where a consumer could place an entire order, sandwiches, snacks, and beverages, all through the simplicity of a text messaging conversation using Google's RBM, or RCS for Rich Communication Services and Business Messaging. This dynamic and interactive technology makes it incredibly easy for customers to get what they want using the conversational simplicity of text messaging and tap-to-select actions. Last year, Mobivity was selected to join Google's Early Access Program and is now among the first to bring RCS experiences to market. RCS, as a part of the new GSMA Universal Profile for Advanced Messaging Industry Standard, represents the next step in the evolution of SMS and provides businesses with a new way to engage and serve customers. Unlike mobile apps, many of which are never used shortly after download, RCS reaches customers within their default text messaging app, an app most customers check hundreds of times a day. For brands like Subway, this technology will open a powerful channel for customers to find the nearest restaurant, learn about special offers, prepare an order, and pay by mobile, while getting a truly engaging and personalized experience. We built the application showcasing a customer searching for a Subway store by sharing their location with a simple button push, selecting their sandwich with a text reply, or by choosing from options on screen, and making selections for a side, beverage, and dessert, all with fun images and simple taps to confirm their choices, and all in the conversational dialogue they use to text friends every day. Orders placed via smartphone will become a $38 billion industry and make up nearly 11% of all quick service restaurant sales by 2020, according to Business Insider Intelligence reports. Given we're now powering up to 80 million mobile marketing engagements per month, we're well positioned to transition these marketing engagements to mobile commerce transactions and become a key point of sale for the industry. Last but not least, I'd like to comment on our progress to incorporate blockchain technology to power next-generation loyalty schemes. Recall that most loyalty programs create small, brand-specific data silos and a fragmented experience for consumers. Blockchain, coupled with the Recurrency platform, can securely store transaction records across brands and allow consumers to build a currency that can be used as they go about their lives. Each transaction informs the brand, rewards the consumer, and enriches the consumer's persistent digital identity. Consumers can take that persistent identity, including their preferences and habits, and leverage it across brands to get better, more personalized service. With Recurrency, each brand owns the data about their interactions with the consumer, but the consumer owns the data about all of their transactions across all brands stored in the distributed ledger of blockchain technology. We've had strong interest since announcing our plans to leverage blockchain technology. Beyond our publicized plans to build a blockchain-powered program for Chanticleer Holdings and their burger brands, we've had several other prospective customers approach us, ranging from a multi-billion dollar CPG brand to various restaurant chains. We believe there are tangible revenue opportunities in adding blockchain technology to our solutions portfolio, given the demand we're seeing. We expect to announce additional customer agreements this year that create new revenue streams for us by applying blockchain technology to next-generation loyalty concepts powered by our Recurrency platform. I will now turn the call over to Charles for a more detailed review of our financial results, and then I will come back for a few summary comments. Charles?
Thanks, Dennis. For the company's first quarter of 2018, total revenue under the new revenue standard, ASC 606, was $3.7 million. Representing a 75% increase over first quarter 2017 revenue of $2.1 million. This increase is primarily due to the impact of ASC 606, which represented an adjustment of $1.6 million for the period. Deferred revenue was $1.6 million as of March 31, 2018, compared to $1.4 million as of March 31, 2017. Deferred revenue consists of payments received in advance of revenue recognition from customers and is recognized as the revenue recognition criteria are met. The increase in deferred revenue is due to the receipts of prepayments from certain enterprise customers. The deferred revenue balance on our consolidated balance sheets does not represent the total contract value of annual or multi-year non-cancelable customer agreements. The first quarter's gross margin was 79% under ASC 606, compared to 74% under the old standard in the first quarter of 2017. The increase in gross margin is primarily due to the ASC 606 adjustments for the period. General administrative expenses increased $233,000 or 23% during the first quarter of 2018 compared to 2017. This increase includes an adjustment related to ASC 606 of $94,000. The increase is primarily due to the increases in personnel costs and share-based compensation expense. Sales and marketing expenses increased $253,000 or 21% during the first quarter of 2018 compared to 2017. This increase was primarily due to more commissions, approximately $293,000, being earned in the first quarter of 2018 compared to 2017. Engineering, research, and development expenses increased $942,000 during the first quarter of 2018 compared to 2017. This increase includes an adjustment related to ASC 606 of $842,000. The increase was primarily due to increases in personnel-related costs supporting the company's growth, as well as fewer software and development costs being capitalized. Our operating loss for the first quarter of 2018 was $1.4 million compared to $1.3 million in the same period of 2017. Net loss for the first quarter of 2018 was $1.5 million or 4 cents per diluted share compared to a net loss of $1.4 million or 4 cents per diluted share in the first quarter of 2017. Net cash used in operating activities increased $1.6 million in the first quarter of 2018 compared to cash provided in operations of $237,000 in the same period of 2017. The increase in cash used in operating activities included an adjustment related to the adoption of ASC 606 of $714,000. Net cash used in investing activities decreased $223,000 to $32,000 for the first quarter of 2018 compared to the same period of 2017. The cash used for investing activities in the period was primarily the purchase of equipment and the capitalization of software development costs. Net cash provided by investing activities was $1.3 million for the first quarter of 2018 compared to $38,000 provided in the same period of 2017. During the 3 months ended March 31, 2018, the payoff of a loan and payments on other notes represented $1.9 million. We borrowed $1 million from related parties and received $2.2 million from the exercise of warrants. As of March 31, 2018, our net cash was $419,000. With that, I would now like to turn the call back over to Dennis for his closing remarks. Dennis?
Thanks, Charles. With a growing sales pipeline, expanding partnerships, and continued upside opportunities from existing customers, 2018 is off to a great start. New customer relationships, such as the private equity-owned brand I described at the beginning of today's call, can generate a material uplift in our financial performance. Couple that with a multi-billion dollar beverage brand partner, who's in some cases even willing to subsidize the costs of our solution for restaurant operators, and we're developing an effective recipe to rapidly expand our market reach, reduce sales cycles, and accelerate growth. We also continue to believe that our expected growth through the first half of 2018, coupled with our accelerating pipeline, will combine for positive operating cash flows by year-end. We appreciate your continued interest and look forward to sharing our ongoing progress with you.
At this time, we'll be conducting a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. And for a participant choosing speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first question is from Jeff Porter with Porter Capital Management. Please proceed.
Hi, guys. Could you give me a little bit more color on how the new accounting treatment increased our R&D spend by almost $800,000? I'm just not following through on how that would work.
Yeah, sure, Jeff. This is Charles Matthews. The revenue that we had to recognize of 1.7, we had to have the implied expenses related to that recognition of revenue. And we had to recognize an implied expense of about $935,000 relative to that 1.7 we recognized. So does that, and out of that 935, 841 was related to engineering research and development.
So how should I think about sort of the, you know, R&D expenses going forward? Are they going to continue to be $1.5 million a quarter?
Well, no. As we recognize large enterprise contracts, we're going to see a bump in revenue relative to that and a bump in the implied expenses relative to that, you know, revenue that we have to recognize. So in periods we have new contracts with enterprise license agreements, you're going to see bumps in both revenue and expenses.
Okay. Is that because we're sort of recognizing about 70% of the licensing revenue up front, and we're trying to match the implied costs of what it's going to take to service that revenue?
Right. That's generally true. As our revenue increases, the costs associated with that are going to, you know, not, it's not a fixed cost relative to revenue. So the variable costs are going to go down as the revenue goes up. So over time, it's going to be less as a percentage basis.
And in addition, the actual expenditures will be credited back over time in servicing.
Yeah, we accrete the expenses that we recognize up front over the life of the contract. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. One more follow-up. I believe you reported a $21 million number for the total amount of contracts going forward. And I understand from a previous call that some of those contracts could be 1 year, some could be 2 years, some could be 3 years. But can you give us a sense of sort of what the average time span of when that $21 million of contracted revenue would be expected to be realized?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest clue is in note three. If you look at the balance sheet where I separate out the ASC portion, you'll see that I've got accounts receivable short term and accounts receivable long term, and since they're both about the same number, it's a fair guess that half is within 12 months and the other half is in the next 12 months. So just based on this presentation, you know, we're looking at a 2-year average to recognize all that increase in accounts receivable.
Right, and that would be minimum contract revenues, and I think in the contracts where you have a significant variable piece based on number of text or whatever, that wouldn't be included in that minimum contract value. Is that correct?
Well, to put it another way, the only thing that we're recognizing up front is the portion that's relative to the enterprise license part of the agreement. Okay, so we're not recognizing anything outside of the license portion. So that stuff is still non-GAAP and will be recognized ratably over the term of the contract.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Jeff.
As a reminder, it is star one from your telephone keypad if you would like to ask a question. We will pause for a brief moment to pull for questions. Our next question is from Brad Gold with AU Consulting. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi. I was just wondering, can you just talk a little bit about your balance sheet with specific emphasis on the ability to just finance yourself without raising money, and just talk a little bit about your debt, which seems as though you're paying, 12 to 15% and the ability to get a bank line?
Well, we recognize that, we need to get more healthy. And, since I've been on here since March 26th of 18, my focus is to make sure that we're being more efficient. We recognize the situation we were in at year end. We did a number of things that are discussed in the footnotes to make it better, but we understand we need to make it more healthy.
Yeah, I think I'll add to that. We mentioned that the recent PE-backed brand that we signed the seven-figure contract with, that their entire contract value is due within the first 13 months of the agreement. So we expect collections from new customer sales also to buoy the cash flows. That's been a big, development in our contract quality as we've sold new brands, is the ability to command upfront payments. It's also important to note that some of the brands that we already have under contract, as we've mentioned in past calls, are also under fairly large prepayments at the anniversaries of their the annual anniversaries of their contracts. So there's quite a bit of cash flow lift through the course of the remainder of the year from some of these existing customers as well, as their annual anniversary lapses and they're required to pay the next 12 months up front.
So obviously that should be beneficial as far as your liquidity goes, but again, I didn't really have a chance to go through the queue, but I went into the liquidity section. Clearly, a capital raise is potential this year, or you're hoping to avoid that?
Well, we're doing everything to avoid it. We don't believe that we required it this time. We were able to get a clean opinion from our auditors on our recent K. So with at least the visibility of the next 12 months, we feel real good with the cash flow or the cash resources that we have on hand.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Yep.
We now have a follow-up question by Jeff Porter from Porter Capital Management. Please proceed.
Hi, guys. Dennis, thanks. You provided some color on sort of this new business initiative we have with a major beverage brand. Could you just maybe explain a little bit more how they see the value in what Mobivity brings to the table, and sort of how you see working with that beverage customer going forward? Is it just going to be on a case-by-case basis, or do you see perhaps a deeper relationship sort of with a global operating agreement?
Sure. So the first part of that question, there's a ton of money that is allocated to help this beverage brand's customers market the beverage brand in parallel to the restaurant brand's own products. And, the win-win there is there's extra money to also help incentivize beverage attachment to orders. And the restaurant brand wins because a lot of times the commitment, there are commitments made by the restaurant brand to procure as low of a price on the beverage product as possible. And so they're incentivized to drive as much volume as they can. The problem is that most of this money goes into untrackable, non-attributable marketing channels like print, signage, menu boards, and no one ever really knows the efficacy of how those dollars drive beverage attachment. And by allocating some of those budgets to our product, you get a lot of kind of the same benefits. For example, our receipt product is essentially a display advertising product, printing targeted ads on receipts. So by being able to include beverage products in those promotions, as well as the brand, the beverage brand's identity. They're getting exposure, but they're also then being able to look at the full loop on how those redeem and cause incident lift. So it really creates this perfect win-win for the beverage brand to get data, to get attribution, and to allocate those co-marketing dollars in a more intelligent way. And then the restaurant brand gets all of those benefits as well. So kind of in this new era of data-driven everything, from presidential elections to general advertising, this is very congruent to how everybody's changing the way that they operate from a marketing perspective. And to the extent that, you know, there are only a few real macro players in the beverage space that are fighting for these restaurant properties, you know, we're being viewed as a tool or a weapon in that arsenal to create a competitive advantage. And that segues to the progress we're making in this partnership, in that we, you know, I can comment that we're already executing sales training for the sales force that this beverage brand employs to work with, pursue, sell, and support restaurant brands. And beyond that, you know, there are more strategic discussions underway as well. And, you know, this is all really developed just in the last 4 months or so on the heels of, you know, kind of the initial joint win that I commented on earlier in the call.
Okay, sounds very promising. Thanks.
Yep, thanks, Jeff.
As a reminder, just star one from your telephone keypad if you would like to ask a question. We'll pause for a brief moment. Okay, this concludes today's conference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.